Ace Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Not Alone Podcast. I'm Jason Moitoso.
And I'm Sam Fredrickson.
And welcome back. We had the 1 week break, yeah. And we are excited to be kind of back in the studio.
Yeah, we are. How was your break?
Kind of non-eventful.
Not much.
Did normal things, but you?
Yeah.
You did other things.
I did. We went to my parents live in Washington, just a little south of Vancouver or north of Vancouver. So we just went up there and we spent all week with them, and we went down to Portland and I bought some books. Bought some research material for the podcast that has subsequently ruined my life. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk a little bit about that at the end.
Sounds fascinating, Sam.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Good.
It was a good time. But I had like this weird feeling all week, and then especially the last 2 days, I felt like this podcast was like my baby, and I had left my baby in the woods for a week. And I just felt so, like, tense about it, and then every minute we got closer to recording, I was, like, happier and happier and happier, and now...
Interesting.
It's good.
See, I slept like a baby.
Oh, did you?
Oh, yeah. That was great, man.
Good.
I got some other things done and out of the way.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
You didn't have to spend all your time reading.
No.
I didn't have to.
You did it because you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Even on vacation, I was still reading and researching. But that's fine. I was doing it in the beautiful, cloudy Washington rain land.
As a Californian, I'm like, yeah.
That's true.
That sounds splendid.
It was.
I miss the sun.
I was born in Oregon, and so there's like a piece of my DNA that doesn't activate unless I'm in the rain. And that piece of my DNA makes me happy. So I'm always sad.
It's sadness.
Anyway. All right. But we are back and we are happy to be back.
And we're kind of touching back on something that we had brought up in one of our earliest episodes. We're going to be talking about High Brazil today, which we mentioned in our...
Rendlesham Forest.
He remembered it. Can't pronounce words.
That's okay.
Because words are hard.
It's true. Stuff and things. It's weird.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard. Yes. And again, we'll kind of go back to High Brazil or to Rendlesham Forest at the end of it. But as you may remember, in the travel log that Sergeant James Peniston received in binary from the unidentified craft in Rendlesham Forest, he noticed a strange location. All the other locations were all like the Great Pyramids, the Sphinx, Chichen Itza, I think, and Machu Picchu and all that kind of stuff. Real live places that you could still go to today.
Totally. And 110% like ancient alien episode.
Right.
Sites.
Yes. I'm pretty sure there's an episode about every single one of them. And this actually, funny you say that, I don't think we mentioned this.
Is there one for High Brazil?
they may mention High Brazil, but that came to light, like that binary code thing came to light and got translated because of Ancient Aliens.
No.
Yeah, they did an episode
on it. It's been around that long? I thought it was like...
Well, that happened in 2010. So he had
I got it mixed up. I thought it was in like the... Like 70s or 90s.
Yeah, no, so the 90s, the first
what I thought it was.
The first like the actual Rendlesham Forest happened way back.
Right.
But then he sat on the book of binary code until like 2010 or so, and then they were like, "Hey, we're going to do this episode on Rendlesham Forest. How about you do it too?" And he's like, "Okay, I also have this. I don't know what it means." And then they decoded it. So, Ancient Aliens.
It's still just suspicious.
No, okay. Anyway, we're moving forward.
Yeah, okay.
Though, if you wanna hear more about that, listen to our second episode on the Rendlesham Forest incident. It's actually one of my favorites that we've done so far.
Ah, dude, fails in comparison to El Chupacabra.
We have got some good feedback. People have liked that episode.
Oh, good.
So yeah. So
Because it Congratulations. Was fresh out the kitchen.
Fresh out the kitchen. Anyway, welcome back. It's good to be back. And we are. We're going to be talking this week about the mysterious vanishing island of High Brazil.
Which I actually kind of like. I like the whole kind of idea behind it.
Yeah.
Every 7 years, this island just kind of pops up, and it's home to either kind of an advanced civilization or giant bunny rabbits. So,
or wizards.
I mean, or both. You never know.
You could never have too many wizard rabbits and wizard tech. Rabbits.
Beautiful.
Yes.
And we're also going to be talking about a couple other ancient mythical islands and civilizations yes. as well. We're just going to touch on that to kind of segue us into thinking more about the possibility of High Brazil.
Yes.
You want to start off with everyone's favorite?
Yeah. So everybody always thinks of Atlantis when you're talking about lost continents and islands that disappeared. And as most people are already going to be familiar with, we'll just touch lightly on it. Atlantis is kind of a weird situation. It's spoken of in Plato's Timaeus, which... Did I say that right?
I'm pretty sure it's Timaeus.
Timaeus. Look at that.
Almost positive.
The student has become the master.
Mainly because it was printed on a Yu-Gi-Oh card.
Okay. Anyway. Timaeus?
Timaeus.
Timaeus. Okay, so Plato's Timaeus, which was written about 360 BC, that's where you get the idea of it being this island situated in the Atlantic. You know, it's larger than Libya and Asia Minor put together.
What is Asia Minor?
Asia Minor, I believe, is the Middle East and India.
Okay, yeah, big.
Yeah, really big. Okay. Even if I'm wrong on that, Libya's pretty big. Like, it's
yeah,
not
Libya's
just a
not
dot.
Small. No. That's for darn sure.
It's not just one little island, which is what a lot of people think
Where
of.
Where do we hide it? Where did it go?
Are we talking about Libya or Atlantis?
Atlantis.
Okay, because Libya is still there.
Was he just talking about North America?
Well,
that's about the right size.
He might have been. Huh. Wow.
Keep a thought.
I'm sure that there's some wonderful scholar out there who can tell me exactly why that's not correct, but for right now, that's going to be my go-to.
Actually, fun fact. There are really odd structures in the Bahamas that people may or may not think are ruins of Atlantis.
Yeah, I've actually seen those.
Yeah, so
They're
I mean
like steps.
Something like that. Steps, columns,
yeah.
Things like yeah.
Anyway. That was good. I like that. So it's bigger than Asia Minor and Libya put together, and it's ruled by a confederacy of kings. Later on in Plato's Critias, the idea of Atlantis transforms from just being this big old landmass in the sea into being this ancient civilization that existed 9,000 years ago and that rose and fell and that, you know, it disappeared into the ocean within a single night, which is, of course, what everybody knows about it.
Right. And that storytelling of it just reminds me of, like, Romanticism, like that era of literature and art.
Yeah.
It feels very, very similar.
Yeah, and since
the cataclysmic destruction of it, all of that, that's just what it rings to me as an art major.
Yes, you are an art major.
Dropped out art major.
Well, but, I'm a dropped out history major, so here we are. You know, Atlantis is weird because since ancient times, since 360 BC, people have been debating whether or not it was real based upon Plato's work. He doesn't specifically say in one way or the other whether or not it was just a story he invented or what, but I mean, I'm going to let the listeners make up their own
mind
about
that. Yeah,
and
I mean, to put it in context, we didn't realize Troy was a real place until, what, like 15 years ago, 20? Like, fairly recent.
I don't know if it was that recent, but it was like...
Troy was recent,
it was within the
pretty modern era.
20th century,
yeah.
Yeah, and we always thought that that was just a myth as well. So, the next one,
and
is...
I had no idea this thing existed, or I had no idea
theoretically
of this myth. Yeah, this magical place.
Yeah. So the next one is the popular mythic land of Lemuria, which was a hypothetical landmass. This one's a little different in that it did not come out of like myth and romanticism and all of that. It actually came out as an idea of how to explain biogeographical diversity and how like certain things.
Yeah, the lemurmen. Giant lemurs. Have you?
What?
People that look like lemurs. Have you never heard of this, Sam? It's called Lemuria. I mean, what do you expect?
I'm going to assume that's a joke and not let it haunt my dreams tonight.
Zaboomafoo.
Zaboomafoo. No. Anyway, so Lemuria was it was more of a scientific theory than it was a romantic legend. It was actually supposed to be a triangular landmass that would have filled the ocean between India, Madagascar, and the western edge of Australia. It is not, it doesn't have any great myth about it, anything like that. Like I said, it was made for scientific reasons.
So how, why was it theorized?
Theorized in the late 1800s because we didn't properly understand continental drift.
Okay.
And Pangaea and like how
tectonic plates
work and all of that. So they thought, well, these areas all have similar plant and animal life in their own way. They must have had some kind of connection.
A giant landmass that sank into the ocean.
It's a totally viable theory. Like looking back, hardly know how tectonic plates work, but if I did not know at all, that's probably exactly what I would have thought. Of course, after a little while, we understood that that wasn't the case. There are tectonic plates. Pangaea was totally a thing. That's continental. It is the coolest thing. There's continental drift, and that's how everything's connected and all of this and that. However, it does still live on in a different sense where it's very, especially in like India and that area, very closely linked to like occult practices and magic and stuff like that. People believe it as
interesting.
Now, the last one that we're going to talk about is actually a real place. It's an area known as Zealandia, which is actually a fragment of Australia that broke off and sunk into the ocean 23 million years ago. So yeah, like you still have places like New Zealand, you have New Caledonia, Norfolk. The thing about Zealandia, which I think is so cool, is that it's like real. It exists.
Yeah, it's actually, which puts the whole Atlantis falling into the ocean thing.
Right. It gives it just enough of weight.
Yeah, reality to make it seem possible.
It would not be like the first time it happened. You know, it happening overnight and it happening only 10,000 years ago. That's different.
It's epic.
It is epic. But it, like, things like that have happened. However, there is a lesser known, more mysterious Phantom Island that is said to haunt the northern Atlantic.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
In an area off the western coast of Ireland known as the Celtic Sea. And that, of course, is the subject of tonight's episode, High Brasil. So, High Brasil, and it's pronounced a lot of different ways. We're going to say High Brasil because
we don't know any better.
We don't know any better. It's actually theorized as the origin of the word or of the name of Brazil.
Right, but other than that, it doesn't have any connection to Brazil.
No, it doesn't. Other than that, you know, modern day tellings of how Brazil got its name talks about the Brazilwood tree off of the coast there. But it is theorized that it could have come from High Brasil because it was during this era of discovery that Brazil was discovered, and it was also during this time that people were really looking for High Brasil.
Well, High Brasil, we're talking, it was first on maps in what, the 1300s?
1325 is the first, like, on a map that
Legitimate. Hey, that's a thing out there. Yeah. We got to put it on a map so no one runs into it.
Yeah, but it didn't even start then. Like, it's been on maps since 1325, but it's been part of the mythology,
Irish community,
yeah, for hundreds of years before that. But before all that, let's talk about what it is. So it's said to be an island situated off the western coast of Ireland in the Celtic Sea. It was supposedly visited by saints and explorers and mythical heroes, and supposedly it is a perfect circle.
Yeah, which is weird.
Yep, that is divided in half by a channel of water.
Right, which is also very weird.
Yes. The name Brazil, I think hi just means island, from what I can tell.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
I think. We welcome your
letters.
I
didn't look into that.
That's okay. Brazil, though, is the name of, in another Irish myth, it's the name of the king of the world. So it would be the island of the king of the world.
Which makes sense because it's believed to be home to a advanced race as well.
Right. We also have stories very much like Atlantis, where High Brazil is the place where you have these technologically advanced people. You have cities built out of gold because it's just so plentiful because they can just make
gold. Yeah, it's
gold.
Like the El Dorado of...
Yes.
Off the Irish coast.
The El Dorado of west of Ireland, but east of America.
I'm just throwing it out there.
I can dig it. And that's really where it starts, is as this paradise area. High Brazil has been around since pre-Christian time in Irish myth. It was first set down to paper in the Adventure of Bran, Son of Feeble, which is a Celtic voyaging story, very much like the Odyssey or the Iliad or anything like that, except it's done by the Celts. And that was first set down to paper in like 680, but just like all myths and legends, it would have had a long history before that because people really couldn't read and write. And even back then,
right, oral tradition.
So there's no really knowing when it comes into account, but Bran, the hero of the Adventure of Bran, Son of Feeble, talks about having found an island that is supported by pillars of gold where there is no sorrow, no disease, and no lack of music and joy. Ever since this first account, the island of High Brazil has not been a place that lives within our reality. It is not situated within our world. In the adventure story, they're basically just sailing around. They're blanketed by a great mist, and they arrive in the other world, which is a place that's to be understood as outside of the realm of our existence. So right from the get-go, it sounds...
like the Upside Down.
This Upside Down.
Right.
That coincides with the world that we see.
It's just a layer on top of a layer.
Exactly. And I think that is a pretty good description of High Brazil and like the qualities of it. You know, as we go on throughout its history, this is where it starts as just this wonderful place in a different realm of reality where everyone's always happy and there's always good music.
So you're feeling a different dimension.
Yes. Well, at this point in time.
Okay.
However, we do have other stories that come down, one of which is from the records of one of the most prominent Irish saints, who is Saint Brendan the Navigator, and he was one of a group of saints known as the 12 Apostles of Ireland. This also took place in around the 600-700s.
Okay, so we're about 300 years after it's been placed on a map.
No, before. It's 600 years.
Oh,
700
I'm sorry.
Years. No.
I was thinking 16.
Oh, 1600. No. No one in front of it.
Yeah.
600, 700.
Following.
I'm on board. So the story goes that St. Brendan was serving as the head of the monastery that he founded in Clonfert, and a wandering monk showed up and told him all about this promised land of the saints. And Brendan got so caught up in this tale that he pretty much immediately grabs 14 men and they
let's go there.
Go. Yeah, right off the way. This monk who showed up, his name is Berend, and he claimed to have set sail to the west, found an undiscovered island, he and his companions were there for 15 days. They never grew weary. They never got hungry. And they happened upon an old man who told them that this island had been since like the beginning of creation. And then the old man was like, please leave my island. And they did so.
I came here for a reason.
I don't like people.
Sounds like a wondrous place.
They pretty much forthwith set sail. There's three other weird monks who show up. They're not really sure where they came from or whatever. And they say, let us come with you. And Brendan says, this is not going to end well for any of you, and you're going to die. And they're like, yeah, totally. Let's go. So, they do so.
Yeah, make me a martyr. Yeah. All right, cool. Let's
totally.
Do it.
So they do so. They
got nothing else going on?
It's a bit of a lazy Sunday.
I mean, you can only ruin my week.
They sail for 15 days to the west of Ireland, just like Baron had mentioned. They got lost, again, trapped in this great fog that descended, and they went ashore on an island. Now, when they got off the boats and onto the shore, they were actually met by a friendly dog, which is where this story kind of takes a fun little twist.
Really, a dog?
A dog. There's a friendly dog there waiting for them, and this dog leads them up through the island up to a hall that's just full of food and provisions. They feasted there for days, and then they left.
Wait, there yes. was just a dog?
There was just a dog.
And, like, they got there, and there's food.
We have to assume...
And it's, like, ready to go.
We have to assume that this dog cooked enough food for 18 men to feast for 3 days. That's the only that's the only logical conclusion.
I didn't find me a dog like that.
Gotta find a dog like that. Anyway, and Brendan would call this the island, he'd call it the island of the paradise of the saints. And in that moment, we see it kind of change from out of our dimension to into our dimension. You have this, the pre-Christian idea of it where, you know, you've got different layers of reality and all the shadow world and the other world.
Right. Kind of more the Celtic background.
Yes. And then you have the post-Christianization of Ireland in that it's not necessarily outside of our reality. It's just someplace that only you can only go if you are holy and blessed and a saint. Practically.
It's essentially like a heaven on earth.
Yes. So these stories. You have the pre-Christian story, the more mythological story of Bran, and then you have the Christianized, you know, more modernized story of Brendan. This is the groundwork for the Hybrizil myth. They do sound like, to us living in 2017, they do sound just straight up bonkers. Like,
it's, yeah.
He tried. But as impossible and impractical as these stories seem, like, there's a reason we're still telling them. There's a reason we know it all about them, and it's because they survived, because they ingrained themselves in that culture and in the minds of the people who heard them. And these crazy, far out there sightings are not the only ones. I mean, you also just have people, normal lay people and sailors and this and that, just talking about seeing an island shrouded in mist that was there and then it's gone. But we're going to move into some more, well, more or less believable accounts. You know, as Jason mentioned earlier, it started appearing on maps in 1325. What's weird is just that if there's one thing they could get right, it was the location of Hybrizil, and it's relative.
Yeah,
distance
that was the one thing
Ireland.
That was, I guess, not disputed.
Yeah, nobody had a problem with where it was.
Yeah, Hybrizil's right there.
Yep, it's a pretty definite location. Now, throughout the centuries, there have obviously been numerous sightings of it, and the other consistent thing is the fog and the fact that it can't be reached. So it'll show up encased in fog. People will row out to it, and one of two things will happen. Either one, it will never get any closer, no matter how long you're rowing, or two, it will get closer, but it'll just straight up disappear when you hit a certain, you know, threshold. When you're right up on it, it's gone. And there are actually people who have gotten close enough to the island to describe the woods that they saw on it, and the rivers on it, and the mountains and the hills. So, like...
Wait, there's rivers, not just that channel?
Right, there's rivers, there's channel.
So the channel's huge.
The channel bisects the island.
Right.
It cuts it in half. But there's other rivers. It's like, it's got woodlands, basically.
Okay.
And rivers
yeah,
that feed into that.
Gotcha.
So
geographically, it all makes sense, sort of. Besides for being circular and
being
this gigantic channel.
Yeah. One of the actual, like, dare I say, reputable stories of High Brazil comes from the 1400s. During this time, this was really the era of discovery. I mean, you've got Columbus sailing the ocean blue and discovering mm-hmm. North America. You've got all sorts of people going out and making a massive push for land grab, hoping to find either riches or glory or even just a place that they can say, this is mine. Obviously, a magical vanishing island.
So could you say that there's maybe pressure to find new land masses?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you have you have monarchies. You have the Spanish monarchy, the English monarchy, especially contracting with people saying, go out there, find me a continent.
Yeah, and there's, yeah.
And then you, of course, have
really
the...
Find me a continent and then find
the
me riches
route
on it.
Yeah,
yeah,
and find me a trade route to Asia and all of this. It's a time when humanity was really reaching out.
Yeah, I definitely feel like it was the first step towards globalization.
Yes, and because you have all of these stories of Brazil or High Brazil being a place of golden streets and technologically advanced people,
El Dorado of Ireland.
Right. There were even people saying that these people were so technologically advanced that they did not age and they did not die. And how cool would that be to be a king in the 1400s and never have to die? So obviously the idea of an enchanted island full of gold with the secret of immortality thrown in is quite a attractive.
It keeps getting richer and richer. It keeps
better
getting
better. Yeah.
Hey man, we got this awesome thing over there. We need to go find it.
Yeah.
Could you pay for the expedition?
Right. Well, and the exact same way that the Spanish sent out Cortez, and Cortez was looking for immortality, the Fountain of Youth.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same sort of concept.
Just a lot closer to home.
Yeah. So in 1480, an explorer by the name of John Jay Jr. from Bristol was one of the first royally commissioned people to go find the island of High Brazil. And he went out. He was out at sea for 2 months, and he came back empty-handed. There were two other expeditions in 1481. One was a ship called the Trinity, and the other was a ship called the George. They both also set out from Bristol, and both came back completely fruitless.
They're a little disheartening.
It is extremely disheartening for the time. Those are the big three that are mentioned. You have more and more voyages over the year that are launched out from Bristol, but you don't have as much record keeping. There's this gentleman named Giovanni Cabato, and he is an Italian explorer who just found himself obsessed with the idea of being the one to find High Brazil, and he wanted to claim it for King Henry VII, who was his patron. So even though he's Italian, he's working for the English. Every year, he would set sail for the king, attempting to find a route to the New World, attempting to find that good old trade route to Asia that everyone's been looking for since the beginning of time, the Northwest Passage and all of that. And he does eventually find something. He finds Newfoundland, which,
oh really,
he not just bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, not
okay.
bad.
Okay.
And he really opens up the pathway then for the British to settle Canada and all of that. But what he's not telling the king is that every year
he's secretly looking out for High Brazil.
He's spending a little bit more time out looking for High Brazil. Now, he never states that he's...
That's sneaky devil.
I know. He just took the ship, took the money, and went. He never states that he finds it. He never states that he gets close to it. However, following a voyage in 1497, there is a mysterious letter that's sent from a gentleman named Pedro de Alaya, who is a diplomat to the English from the country of Spain. And he's actually reporting specifically on the English attempts to find High Brazil.
Okay, so word's getting out.
Word's getting out, and that just shows you again, this is a global thing during this era of discovery. It's a real place that people are trying to find. I mean, you have this diplomat.
Yeah, it's definitely a
writing home about it. Yeah. And he says in these letters, he claims that Kabato claimed that the men from Bristol had been successful in their efforts to locate Hybrasil, and that he had found the same land that they had. The other thing that it does state, just straight up, right out the bat, it says, last year, proof was brought that they found the land. So, that's...
What kind of proof?
It doesn't say. It doesn't say. It doesn't say whether it's gold or earth
kind
or
of
a tree.
Physical that it might be. Okay.
But it states explicitly,
like,
these people found it. They'd been looking for it, and they found it.
So I think it's also super interesting that even though there have been quite a few failed attempts, that it stays on the map throughout this entire time.
Yeah, it does. It's still on the map. I mean, it's on the map all the way up to like 1870 or 1880. Yeah.
And then it fades off into...
Right. Well, and we'll get there in a moment as well, but it did not go down easily. Like, people were like, no, you cannot take Hybrasil off the map. Just because I haven't been there doesn't mean it's not real. I haven't been to America, but I know America's there, so why would we take Hybrasil off the map, huh? And then everybody else would just fight about it. There was a lot of fighting. There's actually a great quote. In their book, Antique Maps, Carl Moreland and David Bannister state that so often had Brazil been sighted that geographers were reluctant to abandon the possibility of its existence. So it really did hang on for a while simply because people believed that it was there.
All these eyewitness accounts, yeah.
Yeah. And that takes us to our next eyewitness account, the funnest eyewitness account.
Ooh.
The account of Captain John Nisbet of Killybegs, Ireland. Which, it should be stated, Killybegs is the largest fishing port in Ireland.
Okay, so they know a thing or two about sailing.
They know a thing or two about sailing. And his experiences actually took place in 1674. So
that's a jump in time. Yeah.
200 years later, that's when we really have our next...
A decent...
Detailed account. Yeah. I'm not going to say it's a reputable account, but it's a detailed account.
I like it.
So Nisbet was an accomplished sailor. He was a ship captain. And he had sailed the coast and the seas of Ireland, like, more times than he could count. He knew this area.
I mean, it's also the, you know, the 1500s. Can they count very high?
Okay, it's the 1600s. And yes, I'm sure they can.
Obviously, I can't.
That's fair. Yeah, these people are smart. He had sailed around the seas of Western Ireland countless times and was more than familiar with the area. However, one day, he's in France. He needs to go back to Ireland. So he gets on his boat with his crew, and they start sailing northwest back home to Ireland. Again, he'd done it 100 times before. He knew where he was. He knew how to get to where he was going. He knew where he came from.
Yeah, that's also probably a very well-traveled stretch of water.
Yeah, he wouldn't be the only person passing through it in that, you know, that few weeks.
The British Strait is
very well traveled.
Yeah, anyway, he's on his way home.
Yes. And suddenly, just like every other time, the ship becomes encapsulated in a dense fog. Suddenly, he doesn't know where he is. He's lost the directions. He's lost his bearing of time. As the fog lifts, his ship goes ashore in shallow waters. They disembark and they make their way onto the island, where they find giant black rabbits bouncing around. They explore the island and they come up to a massive stone castle. Out of it emerges a wizard who invites them in. He explains that he had cast a spell on the island that hid it from human eyes, but that the spell had been momentarily broken, and then he sent them home with a lot of gold and silver. And Not really sure why, but that's what he did. And he sent
them
home.
Sounds like a sweet D&D quest.
Yeah, right? It sounds good. Now, the weird thing about this, again, yes, it sounds completely crazy.
Pretty bonkers.
It's at least partly true. Nisbet, one way or the other, came back from that...
Do you have a lot more gold than what
he came back
France
from
with?
That journey with a lot more... Like, he was a lot wealthier when he got back. It might be that he was just trading this and trading that or whatever. He got a really good deal. But it was a suspicious amount of money.
Okay.
He also arrived home later than he had expected.
They didn't think to bring back a giant bunny.
I know. That'd be so cute. This whole world would be better for it if we had just giant rabbits.
Unless it was carnivorous.
Oh, God.
You're welcome for that nightmare, Sam.
Thank you.
Anyway.
Later on, shortly later, another captain named Alexander Johnson heard this story and said, that sounds great. And so
hey, gold, wizard? Yeah, whatever.
I can dig it.
Yeah, let's do it.
He also sails out and he comes back. It doesn't really say whether or not he's super wealthy, but he comes back. He's like, everything that man said is true. Everything
Dude,
he said
crazy.
Is true.
Hold my beer. Let's go for a sailing.
And people just kind of left it at that. Nobody else wanted to go out to confirm the story. So
it's crazy.
Very strange. When others would go back out, for instance, though, of course, the same thing would happen as before. They may see the island, but they simply can't get to it. It disappears.
Moves
it gets further away. Yeah. And finally... In 1870, like we said earlier, there's some heated discussion, there's some debate, but that's it. They take High Brazil off of the nautical charts of the British Navy.
Yeah, it pretty much just fades away.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, for good reason. No one had seen it. At this point, we really have...
I mean, it's not like 200 years almost.
Yeah. Yeah, it survives another 200 years without a major sighting. That's a pretty good testament to, like, how ingrained it was in this culture.
Right.
And you just have to ask yourself, why? Like, you have all these crazy stories. Why would people care so much about it, spend so much time and money getting there, if there wasn't at least some part of it that's true?
I really hope it's not the giant bunnies that are true.
I really hope it is. That's the best part.
See, I just think magic would be way more fun.
Nah, man. Big old bunnies. Anyway... In 1870, removed from the maps. However,
there's one more major account or testament, I guess.
Well, one more
story.
Yeah.
Really, that brings up High Brazil.
Removing it from the maps did not remove it from existence. In 1872, the author T.J. Westrup was traveling with a companion by the name of Robert O'Flaherty. He was... Huh?
Hoof.
Hoof. He was also traveling with his own mother and a good amount of friends and other family members that he had brought to witness the island. He had seen it a few times, like I think two or three times before, but he was sick of everyone telling him he didn't actually see it. He brought these witnesses along to corroborate his stories. And according to every person on the boat, they stared out at a clear sea. Suddenly, an island simply appeared from nowhere, remained for a period of a few minutes, became enshrouded in mist, and once the mist cleared, there was nothing left.
Just flickers in and out of existence.
Exactly. Now, the very last mass sighting, that was like the second to last sighting. To me, that's the last... I don't know. It's in a different category, because... To me, that's they're journeying out to see it. They're specifically looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
But one last thing happens in 1878, now 8 years after the removal of the island from maps.
Do you think they all wanted to go find it and see it? And that
it could
helps them to maybe have mistaken something else of actually being it?
It's entirely possible. And I think that that may be exactly what's separating that experience
and
from this experience.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they were. They,
and also,
you know,
I mean, I'm sorry for interrupting
you. No, you're
you,
fine.
But, on a few of the very, very late period of maps that still did include it, it was something as simplified as like Brazil rock.
Right.
So it's was literally kind of fading away from an island bit to maybe even something just smaller.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that power of belief could definitely...
It's a major one.
Yeah, it could definitely account for 5, 6, 7, 8 people on a boat seeing an island. What it can't account for, in my humble opinion,
okay,
is an entire village. So
what? What are you talking about?
In 1878, 8 years after the removal of the island from nautical maps, an entire village saw it. It came up out of nowhere, appeared out of nowhere off the coast of Ballycotton in County Cork of Ireland. Everyone who was out at the time,
it's visible from
where they're standing in the village. It's very close as well. This is where we mentioned earlier.
Hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
How far can the human eye see?
Oh, that's a good question.
3 miles.
3 miles. Okay. And so how far away is the horizon? Like how far, like when I'm standing somewhere and I can look out across like the ocean.
Well, yeah. Again, the horizon is essentially like 3 miles out is how far the human eye can see. A human-sized figure, our eyes can only detect that up to 2 miles away.
Okay. Interesting.
Better perspective?
Yeah, I can dig that. Interesting. I'm not even going to try to think about that.
So, I mean, like an island or a mountain, we could see it for quite
a distance. Yeah. But in any case, I mean, Brazil's a large island. Supposedly, it's a bit further out than 3 miles. Supposedly, it's not always there.
But so who knows? It's there if it feels like it.
Yeah, but to the people of Ballycotton, it was right there. They could make out geological features such as mountains, valleys, woodlands, and rivers, and fishermen in waves jumped in their boats. Pretty much anybody who could row jumped in a boat and started going out to it. And as soon as they get there...
It's just a rat race. They're just free-for-all.
Yeah, well, pretty much. I mean, it's this mystical island full of gold and happiness.
And possibly the
Big
Fountain of Youth.
Rabbits. Yes, the Fountain of Youth.
I want to live forever. You want giant bunnies.
I just want a really big
priorities.
Rabbit. Yeah. However, again, just like every other time, they get close, they get close, they get close.
And it just keeps...
No, this time it fades away. It fades away for the same time as the people on the boats, as the people in the village at the shoreline.
Weird.
Yeah. So it doesn't seem to be just some mirage or something that disappears.
Yeah,
when you
because
get close.
I mean, if you look down a street on a hot day,
mm-hmm.
because of the oils and the reflection, it looks like maybe it's wet or like it's
the
water or
shimmery.
Something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But
put
of course,
that in
as
account,
you get
then
closer,
much larger, it changes, goes back to normal. But from two different perspectives, the same exact thing is occurring simultaneously, mm-hmm. and that's weird.
That's really weird.
Unfortunately, it's not easy for me. But like, yeah, whatever. It's just weird.
It's not one of those ones that you can just dismiss.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
for sure. And that I mean, a lot of this is just stuff that you can say it's a myth. It's a
yeah,
legend,
which
it's
I mean,
that,
it's.
But...
A lot of it's firsthand or accounts from a long time ago. So it's, of course, you could do that. Or you could just believe a little.
Yeah, believe a little. I like that.
A little bit.
I mean, when we make t-shirts one day, that's going to be the slogan. It's going to have like our logo and then it'll say believe a little. I like that.
Ooh.
Anyway, so for most people, that's the last...
Like
reputable
sighting.
Yeah.
Mass sighting. Yeah.
But even then, I mean, people still to this day, fishermen are working off the western coast of Ireland are saying, I've seen High Brazil. I went there. I was there last week. You know, these are.
I was there last week. Saw my mother.
Hey, come on. I don't know why they're Italian now. That's all right. But
anyway,
these, of course, can obviously dismiss. As, you know, tall tales, you know, big fish stories, all this and that. However, there's one more story that we have. And this was just 5 years ago.
Hold the phone. What?
Yep. 2012. What? And it is, to the best of my knowledge.
But like, really though?
Really though. This is, to the best of my knowledge, the only time Hybrasil has been documented in any sort of official report.
Do we have a picture?
Beyond, we don't have a picture.
We never have a picture.
I
know.
Well, and I think you'll see why here in a moment. Beyond, like, that letter in 1497 where it says they found Hybrasil, the British have found Hybrasil.
Mm-hmm.
This is the only other really documented official, yeah, any sort of agency.
Yeah.
So 5 years ago, it's 2012. There's a pilot by the name of Nigel Gossier who filed a report of one of his flights over the Celtic Sea.
Okay.
Now, he claimed that the day was sunny and clear when suddenly, and I think we all know what's coming next,
fog.
An extremely dense fog rolled in. It's about 1 p.m. His compass begins to go haywire.
So it's kind of like a Bermuda Triangle, yes, like thing going on.
Yeah, it's a phenomenon known as electronic fog, which happens a lot. Because
that sounds great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It happens a lot in the Bermuda Triangle, but there are reports of people flying into fog banks or fog descending, and suddenly none of their instruments work. Mm-hmm. The plane still flies, thank goodness, but their instruments are out.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Nigel experienced.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
However, so his compass is going haywire. He has no idea where he's going. He knows where he was, though, and that's just above the open ocean.
Well,
nothing around.
Okay, yeah.
For miles. Miles and miles. However, he looks down. He sees a break in the fog, and he sees lush, green, rolling hills.
Of course, the eye of the storm. Was there a channel?
I don't think he saw a channel. I'm going to be honest. However, the channel only takes up, you know, like a sixth of the entire... It's a big channel.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a lot more between the woodlands, the mountains, and all of that. It's a big place.
All right.
He looks down.
I was excited for a channel.
I understand. It's a cool channel. He looks down. He sees the green rolling hills and a definitely there, like not a mirage, not anything else, a definitely there landmass that had not been there 5 minutes before. He claims the fog thickens, the island disappears from view, the fog then fades out, his instruments regain their functionality, and he's back on his way to Ireland.
I've never really understood the whole electromagnetic fog and those weird blurps of electromagnetism, yeah, issues. It's cool stuff.
It is.
Magnets, bro.
It is. And magnets. That is the really, truly last documented sighting of Hybrasil. And we're going to say it's Hybrasil. He's in the Celtic Sea. There's fog.
Yeah, we've got kind of telltale signs.
Like, what else is it going to be?
Green, lush paradise.
Yep, exactly.
Surrounded by fog.
That was just 5 years ago. So, really crazy stuff. So now, theory time. We've kind of done theory time throughout.
I've been dropping in things that sound interesting.
So I've got just one or two more theories that I want to talk about, though.
Alrighty.
The first one is definitely the most tame, the most plausible. There is an area off the coast of Ireland known as the Porcupine Bank. It's an area of seafloor that actually comes to a point just 200 meters below the sea, below sea level. It is theoretically possible that this point was once above the ocean.
Okay.
It is in roughly the same area as Hybrasil has been documented on all of the nautical charts.
Okay.
So the theory, of course, is that the top of the Porcupine Bank is Hybrasil. It, for whatever reason, whether it's just rising sea levels, which has, it's been a problem forever, ever since the Ice Age, it's been a problem. It's just more of a problem now. The rising sea overtakes it, or there's just some sort of catastrophe that forces it underneath, kind of like what happened with Zealandia, mm-hmm, where for no global warming or anything like that, it shifts, it falls, it's underwater now. That's the most real.
Okay,
that's
that. You know, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I do not know, like, sea charts, like, hardly at all. I'm super amateur. I would love to know if like underwater currents move around that region as well.
Ooh.
And maybe they have extremely strong currents at a particular point in time, which pulls the water away from that area.
Right.
It makes it look like a larger land mass.
There we go.
That would be really interesting to find out.
And the interesting thing as well is so many of these stories, they don't know where they're going. They're basically drawn in to Hyversil. They're not going towards it. They're just sailing, and suddenly they get lost, and they get pulled in.
And
so if you do have have extremely strong currents, it could be that that's actually taking the ships. They catch one of these, pulls them off course, and deposits them at the island.
Yeah, that would be, I think, too easy.
Like, too easy of an explanation?
Yeah, yeah. It'd be super cool if that's true.
Yeah.
Well,
that's something to think about.
Yeah, yeah.
Nonetheless.
Just food for thought again. So, what's your second?
Well,
is the
no.
Left base?
No, this one, I actually have three.
Oh, three.
This one is a little more middle of the road.
Okay.
Again, kind of like with it being the Porcupine Bank, it explains some things, not others. The popular skeptical theory, probably the most popular, is that Hyversil is nothing more than a Fata Morgana. Which, you're all right, a Fata Morgana is essentially, it's warm air sitting on top of cool air, and this is the coolest thing I've ever heard.
Yep.
It becomes a refractive lens. So it takes the light from somewhere else, brings it to that location. So you see, in high detail, a city that's not there, an island that's not there. It's there, the wind shifts, and it's gone.
That's it. That's what I think it is. Done.
Okay, and that's totally fine.
That is just too dang cool.
It's very cool. You can actually...
super neat.
If you haven't already, if you haven't heard or seen this, Google, I think it's something like, just Google Ghost City or Alien City over China. It was like in 2015, and a Fata Morgana happens, and essentially what happens is you look up and you see a great black city.
That's
in the clouds.
Terrifying.
It is terrifying. It's like the kind of stuff where people are like, this is it. Aliens,
like
we're out.
Is it like
we're
a giant mirror? Almost? Or, you know what I mean? Like,
right, yeah. Like, it's the city below mirrored above.
Right.
Yeah, something like that, I think, is what happened there. But it can happen where it takes something like that, or it takes it from hundreds of miles away. And,
some sort of light that's bounced off of an island mass gets refracted towards you.
Exactly. And that's the most plausible theory. It makes a lot of sense.
That does.
But it doesn't explain...
Physically landing on it.
And this is where...
Yeah, I mean, the most recent of the stories that we've been talking about, none of them got to the landmass.
Yeah. That's, and the ones that did get to landmass, no one's like, it was a normal little island.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, there was a wizard. There was a tower. There was food and a dog. And so...
Sweet little doggy, brought me the food.
We have to ask ourselves, how much of this do we take? How much of it do we throw out? We know there's definitely something happening. But did these people actually get there?
It's a little outside the realm of normal.
Right.
Now, I think we kind of play around with pretty much every week.
Right. That's
slightly
true.
Outside the realm of normal.
That's true. Now, the only one that I think is a good candidate for disproving the Fata Morgana is the 1490s, where the island was supposedly found, but obviously King Henry VII died one day. England, especially during that time, while they were a rich country, they did not suddenly have a massive influx of gold and silver. Like, they found the island doesn't mean that there was anything on it.
Right.
They may have just found it. So, to me, if we're going to take any of these sightings and enter them into a book of facts, or any of these, visitations, where people actually get there and enter it into a book of, like, yes, this actually happened, that would be the one I would take, and that fits pretty dang well just with it being a normal island, whether it's something in the Porcupine Bank or even the Fata Morgana, where it's just, you know, they could have misidentified what island they found, and Hyversil was never actually discovered.
A light does crazy tricks, man.
Yeah. So,
And then lucky number three.
Lucky number three.
What is your last idea of what it can possibly be?
Bear aliens. With me here.
So aliens, you say aliens.
Bear with me here.
It's going to be aliens.
Bear with me here. Aliens.
Okay. How did I know?
Hear me out here. All right. Everybody knows my thoughts and feelings on aliens. I love them.
If not, go back
and listen to any other. I think I bring them up pretty much every
almost
show.
Constantly.
So, others suggest that the island is associated with extraterrestrials. Now, of course, the biggest catalyst for this interpretation is Rendlesham Forest. Peniston gets the piece of paper, gets the binary code that reveals that the aliens started their mission. The aliens, or in his view, the time-traveling humans from the year 10,000, the journey starts from Hybrasil in that future year and then travels backwards in time to the pyramids, to Sergeant Peniston and Rendlesham Forest and all of that. So that really, before this, I couldn't find a lot of evidence. Or
it's like, hey, aliens.
Correct. But there is one more story that to me kind of does. Like, it kind of does a little bit.
Okay. I'll bite. Okay. Go for it.
So the last experience, we haven't talked about it yet. I was saving it expressly
just
for this.
Yep. Just to back up your theory. So don't shoot down aliens.
It's the concept put forward by a man named, or the story put forward by a man named Mura O'Loy. He reported his account to the Irish historian Rory O'Flaherty in 1684. He claims that he was taken to Hybrasil. He was abducted, buzzword, abducted, and remained a prisoner there for 2 days. He didn't really remember exactly where he was being kept. He just knew it was dark. He didn't really remember interacting with anybody at all. He just knew that somebody talked to him at some point. He was not really given food, wasn't really given water, just left there. He loses consciousness and wakes up back home in his bed on the Irish mainland. However, later on in history, another historian named John O'Donovan claimed a different interpretation of the story was actually given and handed down. He claims that O'Loy was actually a sailor who washed onto the shore of the island. There was a wilderness of trees before him, and out of it came an old man who warned them that the island was enchanted and that he must leave. He was gathering his things to head out, and the man brought him a book. He said he must keep it secret and not open it for 7 years, and if he could do that, he would be blessed by the knowledge inside. Somehow, he was able to do this, and when he opened it, he found a compendium of medical techniques and knowledge that had never even been suggested previously. Using the new knowledge, he became an extremely successful doctor and died a very rich man. So,
those are two
extremely different stories. So this is where we get into the good stuff.
Theory land. Okay. All right. I will ride this ride with you. Go good. For it. I'll humor you.
All aboard Thunder Mountain. Here we go. So, all right. He's told he can't open the book for 7 years.
Okay.
He knows. Let's say that he knows he has the book. Okay, we're going to make that assumption.
Okay.
He knows that if he tells people he has a book given to him by a sorcerer who told him not to open it, you know what's going to happen? Someone's going to open it.
Yeah.
It's just going to happen. It's bound to happen. So, he invents this other story where he gets taken. He doesn't know how. He doesn't know how he gets back. Those are very common anecdotes, common elements of modern day abduction phenomena. So we have two different situations here. The first one is that one of the two stories, or neither, is true.
Yep.
The second is
neither.
That's fair. The second is that one of them is true and the other one is a lie. That's the one we kind of just went with.
Yeah. The third based off one, the assumption of protecting the book. Mm-hmm.
The third one is that both of them are true.
You bear think he with went there me. Twice?
Bear, no, no, no. Bear with me.
Or what? Okay.
Right. We're talking about High Brazil as being an alien craft.
Possibly, right.
Possibly. He was taken inside this alien craft. Possibly. Okay. Given hidden knowledge. Possibly. Sent back home. Possibly. There is...
In a language he can read.
In a language he can read.
In a book he understands.
Possibly. It is undisputed that he was very rich and a very good doctor.
Okay.
This is true. There is...
In the 1800s? I mean,
in
gosh.
In the 1600s.
Oh, that's even worse.
Yeah. No, I it's mean, even what, better.
Amputate someone's leg without getting them infected and dying is probably classifying you as a good doctor.
What if I tell you...
Oh, boy.
...that this is not the last time this has happened?
Okay, Sam.
So...
Keep going.
Bear with me. In the book Communion by Whitley Strieber, one of the most well-known and documented cases of alien abduction, the author, Whitley Strieber, describes an encounter he had with another person who also was abducted by similar beings as he was. He doesn't ever really say aliens. He calls them the visitors. He says that the visitors gave this man the technology and the understanding of how to build... We're not really sure. It's either a new type of energy source or a new type of vehicle. They weren't really able to figure it out. They gave him that technology in 1950, but he didn't remember what had happened until 1985, 35 years later.
Okay.
Once he got his memories back, he tried to build this device, and he essentially almost blew up his barn. And that was about the end of that. He didn't really mess with it anymore. It's been well documented in cases of abduction that what are known as screen memories occur, in that you believe, for instance, that you were driving down the road. There was a natural, like unnatural haze or something. And suddenly you look to your right and you see a large owl. And you think that's weird. And then you keep driving.
Oh, that's odd.
But then under hypnosis or under some other situation, you realize that what you saw wasn't an owl. You also realize that owls usually aren't 3 feet tall, but that never really was too strange to you when you were looking back at it. You also realize that the mist was only there for about 30 seconds, but that wasn't weird either. And it wasn't also weird that it was glowing and had a green tinge. These things only seem strange years after the fact, looking at them again, and then you realize that none of that actually happened. You had actually been... in contact. You're
saying like implanted memories?
Yes, you had actually been in contact with an extraterrestrial.
It's a pretty shoddy job of planting memories.
Well, they don't... I mean, we're going to get into this later.
You think
not
that they
later
are
on this episode, but...
Like subconsciously coming back through a little bit?
Basically, yeah. And your mind...
Melding of memories?
Your mind cannot accept the reality, and so it tries its best... It's not even that necessarily the extraterrestrials are the ones creating the memories. It's that your mind cannot accept what has happened.
So it's
and
more
it
of a
puts up that filter.
Protection mechanism.
Exactly.
Okay.
So what if
it doesn't break you?
Right. What if these memories of him being locked in the castle are the screen memories, and the truth is that he met
washed
with,
up on shore.
Washed up on shore. Or even that he was abducted.
Met with a dude.
And met with an individual who gave him the book, who then he couldn't remember until such a time passed, 7 years. He finds the book again, sees it again or something, finally opens it, and bada bing, bada boom, there it is.
Okay.
That's that theory.
All right, what happened to the book?
Great question. I actually do think it's around somewhere.
You think it's just floating?
Not floating. I think that it's in somebody's library or something like that.
Okay.
I don't know if
it's
I
like
saw
a, maybe a
it.
Personal journal of his or something.
Yeah.
Always something to look up to.
So that's the last theory.
Okay. abductions, waking up paralyzed and seeing things, that is not uncommon whatsoever. I mean, the Japanese have a whole mythos about it.
Mm-hmm.
About a lady being at the end of their bed and they're completely paralyzed and she's terrifying. That kind of stuff happens actually really frequently. And about 5% of people that actually do experience those situations where they wake up, but their body is still paralyzed because they haven't fully waken up, fully gotten consciousness. Yeah. There are about 5% of people, and I can't remember exactly what it says or exactly what it's called, but even though their eyes are open, they are still technically dreaming.
Right.
So you have a lot of, I lost my train of thought, hallucinations involving, and a lot of times they get passed off as saying, I experienced alien contact.
Right.
Especially with modern day, because they all sound extremely similar to one another and pass for being probably really believable.
Yeah.
To a lot of people. Now,
well, I'll tell you, you can keep going if you want.
Okay.
We don't have to keep going right now. And I'm going to tell you
that
why.
Later. We're going
to
be doing that later, aren't we?
So, I mentioned this...
Coming up on the Not Alone podcast.
I mentioned this on an earlier show, but I ended up editing it out. What I like to do is to announce what we're going to do, and that way, I have to do it. And I can't just be like, never mind, it's a bad idea. So, what I'd like to announce, before we get too far into the weeds, I'll let you guys know that the time of recording, we're going at about 2 hours of recording, but we don't want to go too far, too much more off topic. So I'm going to let you know that in 2 weeks, we're going to be covering Whitley Strieber's Communion in detail so that it can haunt your dreams as it has haunted mine.
And I'll do everything I can to make sure you sleep soundly.
There we go. So end of the episode. What do you think? What's your theory?
So, based off of the binary code from Rendlesham Forest, I would like to say that it was some sort of ancient location of some degree of importance.
Okay.
That was lost to sea at some point in time.
Okay.
Mainly because everything else that does pop up on that are very well known, very important locations for human history.
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
I can dig it.
What do you think?
This is really out of character for me. This might shatter people's images of me in their minds. I think it's just weather phenomena, like all the way. I think it's a combination. I think that the electronic fog is something that's been documented to happen.
Right.
It's a real thing that happens.
It's weird stuff.
It's weird. It's not ghosts necessarily or aliens.
Oh, I would not say that either.
Yeah. Some people would.
That's fair.
Between that to explain Nigel, the Fata Morgana to explain such the sightings, and then just a misidentification elsewhere.
Okay.
Just saying, hey, I sailed, I saw this thing. And for the not as weird, not as crazy, really the only, the 1490 seven note.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just another island that they thought was High Brazil, but it doesn't necessarily mean it is.
Yeah. Okay.
It's such a good story. I love the story. I love the lore. I love the myth of it.
It's super interesting.
But
to say the least.
It's just, that's all it is.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion.
Another mystical island.
Yep. I don't know how to reconcile that with Rendlesham Forest. I don't.
The other thing is,
by this point, I guarantee you that for the majority of people, you know, not necessarily people who follow the paranormal or supernatural, but for a lot of the lay people in that respect, never heard of High Brazil before, probably won't hear of it again after this. It's not a super popular thing these days.
Right, and I think that's what gives at least the Rendlesham Forest account a little bit more, quote-unquote, credibility.
Right. Well, and you got to think that
it wasn't really anything in pop culture.
It's not like starting place of the expedition is Atlantis, you know. And you got to think that Peniston was an American spending time in Britain.
Yeah, he wasn't even, like, the coast of Ireland.
Yeah, not even close. He wouldn't have been brought up with that folklore or anything like that. Right. So that's the only thing that I can't reconcile with ideas. And, you know, that's okay. This whole podcast operates on that other 5%.
Yeah. Exactly. That's where we're at.
That's where
and
we are.
I guess so. That concludes kind of our theories and our thoughts about it. Of course, we'd probably love to hear yours.
Oh yeah.
And if you come up with some good ones, let us know.
Yeah, let us know. We always love hearing from listeners. We love feedback. We love.
In fact, we have some feedback that we received recently, right?
Yeah, we do. I'll get into that in just a moment. Because I made a deal with you people, and you guys are actually holding up pretty well.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. You people.
Yes, the listeners.
Excuse me. Our beloved fans.
Our beloved fans.
And parents.
Yes. Hi, Mom. Anyway, I made a deal that if you wrote a review, I would read the review. So that's what I'm going to do. We had a great one come in over the last 2 weeks. It's by a fella named Tony the Mechanic. He says... stumbled across this on Twitter, so glad I did. The show is funny and informative. Love the how fact oriented it is. I just wish there were more episodes.
We're working on it.
And he
take
signs
it, easy, Tony.
It.
Take it easy.
He signs it. Your fans from Hillbilly Horror Stories, which is actually another podcast that covers a lot of similar things. For instance, this week I think they're covering Rendlesham Forest.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. So we've actually set it up. This isn't going to be for another month or so, but we're actually going to go do an interview with them, just kind of kick around things. I think he wants to talk about the Chupacabra.
Yeah.
So I'm just probably going to sit there rolling my eyes. But I have listened to him, and it's great stuff. It's a great show. It's a fella named Jerry and his wife named Tracy, and they, I mean, obviously they're married, but they just have such great chemistry together. They just make it a lot of fun. Tracy always comes in from the point of not knowing a single thing about it, and Jerry comes in knowing everything there is. So it really keeps you interested because you can feel it. Well, it's a little different. I mean, you do your own research. I do my own research, and then we kind of discuss. We have a shared amount, but most of the time she's going in blind, and it just gives it this great feel because you can feel her interest and excitement, and it, like, even for things that I've listened to and read about and know all about, like, it gets me excited to learn even more about them. So Hillbilly Horror Stories, I'd highly recommend them. Check them out. They're pretty cool. The other thing is, as you know, we're part of the Ace Podcast Network. I'm trying to go through, just find a show every week to kind of talk about a little bit. And I think you're going to like this one too.
Ooh.
This one is called, this one is called Beware and Warning. So it sounds like my kind of thing from the beginning. What it is, it's the host and guests. They sit down and they go through a choose your own adventure book.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's really fun. Like, it's really fun. They sit down, they're talking about, and you know, the books are ridiculous. And so they just talk about them, riff on them, and you just get to go through this little adventure with them. I can't recommend it highly enough. It's been one of my favorite things that I've discovered.
Sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
All right, new life goal. Get on that show.
There you go. They had one called The House of Danger. These are all from the actual Choose Your Own Adventure. Like, you know, with like mythical art and the big red box and all of that. The one that I liked the most so far is their second newest, House of Danger. And you go in to the house and there's like an evil Civil War ghost. And there's like a giant Venus flytrap and evil monkeys and old timey dungeons and robots and aliens and possibly robot aliens. And
so it's like...
it's good stuff. It just really is.
Cabin in the Woods status.
Yeah, kind of. Pretty much. So that's Beware and Warning. That's my recommendation there from the Ace Podcast Network. I also want to do this really quick.
Okay.
I want to plug my cousin. Right. My cousin actually has a podcast. So you know me. Do you?
You have a cousin?
I do. That's not supposed to be the surprise. And I don't think it's going to surprise anybody when I say this. I don't know anything about sports whatsoever, other than the little bit I've picked up playing Madden on my PS4. Because I may not know what a football is.
Dude.
But I love Madden on my PS4. It's so fun. So their podcast is called Gut Check. We'll link to this as well as Beware and Warning and Hillbilly Horror Story. We'll link to it all in the show notes. And it is basically my cousin Seth. He actually coaches a little bit of football over in, I think he's in West Virginia. He plays football in West Virginia on the collegiate level. So he goes with his gut. And then his buddy Matt is a mathematics. He has a degree in mathematics. So he goes like analytically, like
awesome
players and this and that. So right now they're doing the NFL draft, just saying.
Yeah. And isn't the NFL schedule coming out like this week or shortly?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and so that's. So,
yeah. They're probably ramping up for it.
Mm-hmm. They're going through it as if Seth goes with his gut to say, if I had first choice, second choice, third choice, and Matt goes with the numbers. And I like it because even though I don't know a thing about sports, I can understand what they're saying. Like, they don't use jargon or talk too much about things that I don't understand. It's just a great, fun time.
Like wide receivers and quarterbacks and tight ends.
I know a quarterback.
Okay.
Kind of.
Center. Do you know what the center is?
He's in the middle?
Yeah. Yeah! Good job.
English. So they just did their first episode like yesterday. Check them out. They are on iTunes. It's Gut Check. We'll have that link in the show notes as well. And then the last thing is that my wife started a blog, and it's super dope. And there's all this good food. There's all these lifestyle posts and stuff. That's a spoonfulofgrace.com. I know I'm plugging a lot of things right now, but I really love my wife, and I'm super proud of her. And so go to that. If that interests you at all, either learning how to make delicious food, learning how to get your life in order, learning all sorts of things. I mean, just go check it out. It's coming along really nicely, so... Cool. And then Jason,
am I supposed to talk now?
What are we talking about next week? And why are we talking about it next week?
What are we talking about next week? What do I get? See, this is when I forget things.
So
what are we talking about next week, Sam?
If you've ever
just whisper it to me.
If you've ever looked at any of our biographies, whether it's on like our website or it's on the Ace Podcast Network website or anything like that, at the very end it says Sam and Jason are both gigantic nerds who spend way too much time and money on Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
In honor of the new Amon Khet release that's happening next week, which is all Egyptian god themed and stuff, we're going to be talking about King Tutankhamun.
Yeah.
And the supposed curse that haunts him and all those who disturb his rest.
Literally killed like everyone.
Yeah. So great. That'll be good.
So it'll be fun.
Cool.
I totally blanked on it.
That's okay. You're okay. Apart from that, thanks for listening to the show. You know where to find us: Twitter @NotAlonePod, Facebook @NotAlonePod, Instagram @NotAlonePodcast. Go to notalonepodcast.com, leave a comment, get in contact, email us notalonepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your take on the stories your opinions, or if you have any stories yourself you want to tell us and maybe tell on the air, we'd love to hear them. I did it last week.
Oh, you're going to.
Do you want to do it this week?
You're going to trust me?
I am going to trust you.
Oh, man. Whew. It's going to be rough. Here we go.
Remember, right. You have to say remember. You always forget to say remember.
Remember to say remember.
Remember to say remember.
So remember, whether you're setting sail across an open sea or dining on a feast given to you by a dog, we are
not alone. Yes. That was actually pretty good.
Butchered.
No.